The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
By way of introduction, my name is Bill Rector. I'm the headmaster of Coram Deo Academy in the Dallas area. We have three campuses. We have over 1,200 students. As a matter of fact, we anticipate 1,275 students in the fall of this coming year on three campuses. We are a classical, Christian, and we're also a university model school. Coram Deo has been in existence since 1999. And I want to tell you a little bit about my journey, as I've heard so many of the other people today talk about connecting these ideas with parents, connecting these ideas even with other faculty members. So much of what I'm going to say will resonate with some of these very good ideas. But for me, it's been more of a personal journey. You see, I came to Coram Deo Academy in its second year. There were 57 students, and I did not know a thing about classical education. 17 years ago, in the year 2000, I was a part-time math teacher. Now, this is funny. I had a job. I had, because of my previous career in telecommunications, I was working on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays as a telecommunications consultant. And I got a tip that they were looking for some people to help teach math. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays previously, I had tutored math for the athletic department when I was in college. I was tutoring on this brand new thing called the internet at the time. And I contacted Rodney Marshall, who was the founder of Coram Deo, and I said, "Do you need any help?" And he says, "Well, yeah, but I only need help on Tuesdays and Thursdays." So you understand, to me, this was a God thing. I wasn't attracted to the fact that it was classical education at the time in 2000. I was attracted to the fact that the suit fit. It was the Tuesday and Thursday I was looking for. The school had 57 students. It grew before I took over to have over 1,000, and so we experienced a great deal of growth in that time. And the founders of the school, Rodney and Robbie Marshall, did an amazing job of explaining the beauty of classical Christian education. I mean, we would sit in awe and watch them present to potential families. And they would present to us as faculty members as well. And we learned from them. There is one thing, though, that I look back. In my 17 years, I realized I knew nothing about this back then, and it is kind of helpful. As you've heard from previous speakers, in order to relate to people who don't know about classical and Christian education, it's helpful to remember what it was like when you didn't know anything about classical Christian education. And there's really only a small percentage of people that have really truly grown up in it. So most of us have that conversion experience. And I did too. I can recall that over the 17 years I've learned a lot. I've learned so much that I truly believe that in 5 or 10 more years I'll look back to this moment and think with relative ignorance. So I hope you'll forgive me for that on my journey. But it does teach us something. That these ideas take longer to digest than they do to serve. I call this the Chinese restaurant problem, right? It is much faster for us to serve an idea in a 20-minute presentation about classical education, and it might take years for this to soak in with our parents. Maybe I'm just slow on the uptake, too, but I will tell you that it has taken me that long in some cases to truly digest and understand what was being presented. And I say that because I believe that there's a parallel to that and our understanding of the gospel message, our understanding of Christian discipleship. The Apostle Paul, I believe it was 11 years between the Damascus Road conversion and the first missionary journey. And while I'm sure there were things that he did that helped him learn, 11 years is a long time that we need to recognize that it took some of these ideas to grow into his mind and be part of his soul. So I've noticed that. and I've noticed that I don't think you can push this idea with people. I know that many of these ideas were presented to me at conferences for 2 or 3 times before oh, I think I get that now, and I see how that connects to something else. I told you that in my previous life, I was a telecommunications executive, and we were building towers all over the country so that you could have what was then the 2G network. Right now, it's several Gs beyond that, but that's okay. We were building at a feverish pace, and we were just constantly pushing the schedule. You know, every day that a tower is online for a telecom company in that day with cellular was tens of thousands of dollars of revenue, so we were just pushing the schedule constantly. Finally, my construction manager blew up at me. And he said, I really will never forget this. He says, you know, concrete can only cure so fast. And I said, I know that, but I mean, we just want... He says, no. He says, you corporate guys know that it takes one woman 9 months to have a baby, but you somehow think if you throw enough money at nine women, you could have a baby in 1 month. And I've never been so humorously and instructively insulted in my life, and I remember it, because there are some ideas that have gestation periods that we need to allow. And I say this because boot camps are wonderful. I know Christian educators that are colleagues of mine that swear by their boot camps. They also give their parents reading lists to have before they begin. Those are all wonderful things, and the things that are on their list are things I would concur with. I'm not suggesting we don't do that, but I do think we need to think of the process for ourselves, for our teachers, for our parents, and our students more like a classical discipleship that would parallel the way we disciple people in their knowledge of the love of the Lord. Amen? Okay, so this calls for us to think not just how we inoculate them once, but that how we repeat the boot camp. How do we invite them back? After Labor Day, our school has an opportunity on the Tuesday following Labor Day where we invite parents back. It's an idea of Mrs. Rogers here. Some of my colleagues are sitting with me. You'll get to hear from them in a minute. They're wondering if you'll actually get to hear from them. I promise you will. I will surrender the microphone. But the point is not the boot camps are bad. It's let's do them again and again. Let's continue to have them do that. So as we think about our own growth in Christian discipleship and classical Christian education discipleship, it's helpful for me to think back, and what was this like 17 years ago? There are two questions I might ask you to think about that have been helpful to us as we rethink how we connect to people. And I think the first is, what is the expectation for knowledge that you're expecting your parents to have, first when they walk in the door, and second to have informed consent before they enroll their child? How much do you want them to grow upon that ladder and start, how many steps along that journey before you would be willing to say, yes, I think you understand what's going on now. Come along. And then the other thing is, what do you remember about your own journey? What were the ideas that resonated with you the most the first time you heard about classical Christian education? Because as some of our previous speakers have mentioned, these are people that are looking for something. The right fit for us are parents that are looking for something they cannot name. Like the statue to the unknown God. They know they want something. They can actually define what they want, and they still, in the words of U2, haven't found what they're looking for. I was going to sing that, but I guess we won't. So to like that, to this altar to the unknown God, we want to tell them, I've come to tell you about this thing you've been longing for. This education you know has to be better than what is. I've come to tell you that's what we do, and that helps us. Well, after being a part-time teacher, and the school grew to 1,000 students while I was teaching, and then I became the principal of the upper school. And I want to tell you my journey, not because my biography matters to you, but because in that role as the leader and the principal of a school that had hundreds of students in it, I found that I had to adopt a different role. See, the founders of the school were still doing all the evangelizing. They were the ones that were going out and connecting this with people. I found my job as the principal of the upper school was to be the guardian at the gate. And this is kind of true confession time. You can confess along with me if you like, but I'm going to just tell you that somebody in your school has to say no. somebody in your school, despite how much you want to connect these ideas with people, has to say this is not a fit. You know, Proverbs 22:10 is the verse that says, drive out the mocker and out goes strife. If you've been in leadership in a school, you know you've had to live out that rule. You know that. I did. And it's a hard thing to do. An Italian mathematician from the 1800s named Vilfredo Pareto invented what's called the Pareto's Law. We probably know it better as the 80-20 rule. Since I was a math teacher, I taught about Pareto all the time. It suggests that 80% of your results that you're looking for come from 20% of your activities. The corollary to that is unfortunate, which is that you spend 80% of your time achieving only 20% of your results. And I think that applies very much to students and families at your schools. I'm just being truthful here. There are some students that are a significant year upon year drain, and we spend 80% of our time and energy, and this is more than just time and energy. Our souls are broken for these people. And our schools are sometimes better when we say, no, please move on. You don't share the same values we have for high achievement. I've had to say that before, and I know some of you do have as well. And that could be a lonely feeling. I can tell you, in the years when we were growing and we grew to 1,000, I felt like I was the only one that was, if someone was going to say no, it was going to be me. And you know, that's not entirely true, but you start to feel lonely when it's your job to do that. Now, most of you know that as heads of school or people that have been, but I tell you that to say that as much as we want to connect what we do to other people, other forces have been shaping you as the leader of the school to actually be the guardian of the gate. Do you see that? Do you see that there was a conflict there? Maybe some of you have resolved that conflict, but for me, that was an internal struggle. As we were wanting to grow people, I was not necessarily wanting to grow. I would have been fine if we had capped enrollment at some point. I'm just saying that, okay, by means of confession. Because I was so tired of having to say no. I was so tired of those students that kept me up at nights praying and worrying about them and their relationships. And maybe some of you can understand. I won't ask for an amen, but maybe some of you can understand. All this came to a head for me 7 years ago, in 2010. When the people had been doing this beautiful job of evangelizing classical and Christian education to our community and to our families, left to go do that to a broader market. 1,000 students was not enough for them. Now that tells you where their heart is. And they left to go on and do this at other places, and I found myself the headmaster of Coram Deo Academy in 2010. And it was now my job to evangelize the families, to try and connect classical Christian enrollment. And I wasn't sure how aggressively I wanted to do that. Just being honest. Add to that the fact that the presentation materials that I inherited were geared towards these people that they saw truth and goodness and beauty, and they began with the beauty and taught. And I don't know that I'm as much of someone that values beauty, unfortunately. Maybe it's because I look more like Shrek than Fiona when it comes down to it. I was kind of a ham and eggs person. I was a math teacher, right? So math teachers are laughing. It doesn't mean that we're all that way. But me trying to use their presentation materials was like David trying to use Saul's armor. It didn't fit, right? So as a result, for the first 4 years I was the headmaster of Coram Deo Academy, our enrollment did not grow. We stayed flat at about 1,000, and that was okay with me. Enter Dr. Donnie Brake. Dr. Brake has been with Coram Deo for 15 years, started as our school's athletic director, and then he became the development director, and he came to me and he says, you know, you've been teaching a lot in the classroom, and I know you're working on the educational model and the curriculum and the things in the math classes and in the other classes that interest you, but you need to have somebody that wakes up every day and thinks about how to connect this wonderful product we've got with people who need it. And that's me. And he volunteered to do that. And I'd like to introduce him to you now and let him tell you some of the ideas that we implemented that changed things for us in the last 3 years. Dr. Brake.
You know, when I heard the motto for this conference, I really resonated with this idea, repairing the ruins. Because being not from classical education myself, I was public school educated. And I looked at this at conference and I said, wow, that's a very interesting concept. Because it's really what we've been trying to do in Flower Mound, Texas for the last 15 years. Trying to connect with other people about this type of education. In fact, one of the things that Bill and I were talking about in getting ready for this conference was thinking of this in terms of, we have some bread that hungry people really need. It's not enough just to be there ready to give it out, but we have to go find people to share this with. You know, I'm involved in a ministry in South Sudan. And as you know, if you follow African politics at all, people in South Sudan are starving to death. And the United Nations is doing everything they can to make sure those folks get food. They set up these depots all around the country where people come, get their monthly ration for food, and then they go home. The problem is, there's a lot of people in the rural areas that can't get to those depots. So the ministry I'm involved with, we go out, we try to find these people, give them food, train them on how to grow their own food, because we know that they can't get to those depots. And I liken that to a lot of what we do at Coram Dale, is we believe that we need to go out there and take this bread that we have, this classical education, this Christian classical education, and take that out to the families in our areas, in our neighborhood. And it's got to be more than just our sphere of influence. It's got to be more than my family. I mean, my kids went to school at Coram Dale for a combined 26 years. So I love the school. I love what it's about. But I didn't grow up in a classical model. I don't understand classical education, certainly as well as most of you do. But what I understand is this model really worked for my kids. It really worked for a lot of friends of mine. So it's got to go out past that than just my own friends and associates. And so, you know, I was thinking, where are the hungry people in our community, in your community? Where are they? I think for the next 10 years or so, we're all going to be working with millennials. These people are finding and looking about everything on the internet, on the web, World Wide Web. In fact, one of the things that we've talked about in our own marketing sessions is that we just have gotten away from any kind of print advertising. We just don't think it works anymore. We don't think anybody looks at that. So we've gone to almost all exclusive online work. While at Coram Dale, our number one marketing tool are our families. There's no question in all our surveys that we get back from current families and prospective families, it's always because almost 50% of the time it's because they've heard from or they know one of our current families. So we have a lot of evangelists out there. We have about 670 families in our school. But there's still a lot of other people out there that would love to hear about this type of education. So my role as the Director of Institutional Advancement is to find people who need and want a classical education. So the first thing that we did was when we started thinking about how to do this was, okay, what kind of families would we like to have come? So we kind of put together the perfect family. And what we found is because our ministry specifically is to Christian parents and families, that was number one on our list. We wanted to market to Christian families who are involved in a local church. Because we're a university model school, we prefer, I don't know if we prefer, that's probably not the right word, but a lot of our families are single parent income families because somebody's got to be at home with the child on their off days when they're doing their schoolwork. We also really like people that don't know anything about classical education. A lot of our marketing pieces and our marketing online is specifically designed to pique their interest about classical education. So that they're already Christians, they're looking for an educational model, we want to pique their interest with some of this. And so that's what we've done. We've created a bit of a profile for this is the kind of family that we want. And so then we target all our marketing online towards this. And so I want to give you five things that we do. If you want to talk about this some more later, I'll be here all afternoon, so I'm happy to share this with anyone. But there are five areas that we feel like have been critical for us. Number one is we spent a lot of money on a website. And I can tell you our finance director was sweating bricks when I told him we're going to spend $17,000 on a website and then $13,000 a year to maintain it. And I can tell you, and Mrs. Rogers can attest to this, our admissions director, that that's probably the best thing we've ever done from a marketing standpoint for our school, to have a state-of-the-art website. And then along with that, we made sure that it was a website that could be found easily. We've spent a lot of time and energy on search engine optimization. If you know what that is or don't know what that is, I'm happy to explain it to you, but that's a very, very important component to having a good website. We have between 5,000 and 6,000 new hits a month on our website. The second thing we work towards is because we know that most of the people that are coming to our school now are millennials, we're heavily involved in social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and there's probably a couple others that, not being a millennial, that my staff do, because we want to connect. We want them to see us. We want them to hear about us. We want them to see about the fun things that are going on at our school. Like I said, we've gone away from all print media advertising. We do remarketing ads. We do a lot of Facebook ads. And then the one thing that we found that has had a major impact are online reviews. And I don't know why I never thought about that, but a friend of mine came to me and said, "Hey, you guys ought to start doing online reviews." You know, the first thought is, oh my gosh, what if somebody gives us a bad review? Well, he said, well, you just need to have 60 or 70 times good reviews for every bad review. And so 4 times a year, we send out emails to people to, hey, give us online reviews. And I can tell you about 1 out of 4 of our applications that come in will say something about they saw us on an online review. And it's really easy to do, and we started with about 4 reviews, and I think we have a couple hundred reviews on multiple sites at this point. And we continue to add to that 3-4 times a year. The other thing we do is we do a lot of handwritten notes, thank you notes. When somebody comes to our school to visit an on-campus meeting, we send them a handwritten note saying thank you. They get an email online saying thanks for coming, here's how you apply. But every one of them gets a handwritten note. This year alone, we've probably sent out 500 to 550 handwritten notes to people. The last thing that we do is we do 5 on-campus meetings for the public every month, starting in October and finishing in June. In fact, we just did the last 2 this week. We've had over 600 people inquire about our school this year, 600 families, and 500 of those families attended one of our meetings. Of those 500 families that visited our campus, we received about 350 applications, and it looks like we'll have about 260 to 270 of those actually become students next year. We have about a 90% retention. So for us, we'll grow about 6 to 8% this year. And we feel like that's a pretty good number for us to kind of maintain. But once we get to this position where we're getting people to come and visit our campus, then we have to have somebody who can really share clearly the vision of Christian and classical education from Coram Deo. And I think that's what Bill will tell you about a little bit.
Yeah, the social media was something that was a little bit of a hurdle for me, honestly. But Donnie challenged me, and he convinced me, look, if you want to take bread to where hungry people are, the millennials are looking online. And they'll find out through people in their church. They'll hear that word of mouth. But then they'll check out your website, and they'll check out all these reviews. That if you want to bring the bread to the people that are hungry and don't know that it's classical yet, that's where you go. But he also challenged me to be the chief evangelist for the school, that when they came to an information meeting, they needed to hear from me. And I told you my own difficulties with that, that other people had done that really well. But I accepted that challenge. And one of the things that it meant for me in a personal journey, starting at about 2014, was that I had to go completely out of the classroom. When we have five meetings on three different campuses each month, it required me to be really devote more time to that than would allow me to be in a classroom. I also had to make that presentation my own. And that was really, that's something I want to tell you a little bit about that happened for me. But if you're going to be the chief evangelist for you, your school, it has to fit. It has to fit your style. You have to make that work. Another thing that I wanted to make sure of, and Mrs. Rogers is going to tell you a little bit about that later, is I wanted to make sure that we were distributing the load a little bit here of the people that might have to say no. When you cast that broad of a net, different things happen. We heard this morning that you'll get people that look different, and that's just fine. But you also get people that just, it's not a fit. And I think we've told you that because of our unique situation of also being university model, sometimes we have to filter that. I did not want to put that load, like I felt it was on me, on the other principals in our school, to be the one to have to say no. So I was thinking like a math teacher a little bit, you know. I wanted to be able to be so clear and so concise that I was actually convincing. I think it was P.T. Barnum who said that the key to sales is sincerity, and once you can fake that, you've got it made. Now, I didn't want to fake it. I wanted like a math proof on the board. I wanted the logic to be so compelling. I believed it, and they would believe it. And that required me to educate myself about classical education differently. I want to make sure you hear that. 17 years of conferences, and I needed to educate myself about it differently in a way that I could explain it to someone else. Not in an elevator pitch, but in my own presentation. And so we remade that presentation. We got in and we started looking through what are the ideas that were important to me to lay out, that math proof, if you will, for me to be able to give that convincingly. And we also kept coming back. This was a team effort. I was challenged by many of the people in our organization, and the three of us up here represent just the tip of the team of people that have worked on this. But we wanted to ask ourselves that question. What were the ideas that resonated with you when you first heard about classical Christian education? That's what we wanted to go back to. And we came up with four. Now, by the way, we researched this. There were times when Dr. Brake would actually be sitting in the, you know, back maybe in the corner, watching the audience reactions. You know, if we could have hooked them up to galvanometers to get, you know, skin response measurements, we would have. Right? We wanted to know which ideas were resonating with people. And sometimes you can tell by looking. And other times we'd follow up with conversations and survey data. So when I tell you that these are the top four ideas that we've presented that resonate with people about classical education, there's some data behind this, okay? And I'm, again, in the same way with Dr. Brake, I'm happy to discuss this with you later. And for you, it might have been other ideas, but these ideas resonated with me as well. The first was the stages of growth in grammar and logic and rhetoric. And when I first heard about that, as someone new to classical education, I said, that is a map that corresponds to the reality of what I've seen. And I do not want to be dogmatic about those stages of development. I think we can fall too hard in casting the lines between grammar and logic and rhetoric. But I knew as a parent that my children could read Go Dogs Go over and over again. I knew that. You didn't have to tell me that. Dorothy Sayers wasn't the first person to tell me that. And I knew that logic age children wanted to argue the rules with me. Right? They didn't want to watch VeggieTales over and over again. If Larry the Cucumber needed a hairbrush so bad, how come he doesn't have hands? That's the observation of a logic school student. And then in the rhetoric, the teenage years where self-expression becomes so dominant. Do you understand? You know, last night we were looking for a restaurant that gave us a map of the city here. And as we're walking along, different things correspond to the reality that we're seeing. This map of grammar, logic, and rhetoric corresponding to those stages of development resonated and connected with the reality I've already seen, and it resonates and connects with the reality that the young parents and millennials and faculty members have. It's one of the most resonant ideas that connects classical education as a distinctive to new people. The second idea was something we've heard of before, and we've talked about this before, that sometimes these people are looking for something that they don't know. It was described earlier with someone that said, we got out this math test from the 1890s. Dr. Christopher Perrin said this one time. He actually said, I think it was last year at an Association for University Model Schools conference, he said, classical education was known by a different name 100 years ago when it was just called education. See, I'm not relying on your definition of classical education. I'm appealing to the fact that you're looking for something that you know back 100 years ago was better. And I don't need to malign the public school system. Other speakers have told you, they're sometimes doing that so well, it would be ineffective for me to. I'll tell you something, I have genuine pity for a kindergarten teacher that has 28 students and cannot possibly know where each of them are on the spectrum of care. Are they loved? Are they in a family that cares about education? Are they fed? Are they abused? Right? I mean, honestly, I've gone from fighting these people to having genuine pity for them. Amen? Okay, there's a couple of Pentecostals out there, I'm glad. And so this resonates, this idea resonates with people. They know something's wrong with the existing system. They know that. And so when we tell them that this is an idea that began 2,500 years ago, and it was developed, and Christians molded it, and all of a sudden they're interested, and they're willing to look. Okay, that's the second idea that resonates with new families very well. The third one is this concept of teaching towards ideals rather than man-made standards. It may be one of the most important ideas from David Hicks' book, Norms and Nobility, right? The concept which is that, you know, you could argue all you want about these man-made standards. There is an ideal standard that we are meant and designed in our soul to pursue. You know, Jesus did this in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, you know, you've heard it said not to murder, and I'm glad none of you have murdered anyone. At least I hope you haven't. But the ideal standard is that you not even have a hateful thought in your heart towards someone, right? So the Bible illustrates this and reinforces this idea that there is an ideal and there are man-made standards. And the more we aim at the ideal, you know, we still have to have tests and grades, but the more we aim the instructional standards at the ideal, that is a hallmark of classical education and a resonant idea. For the math teachers in the room, I found in a book, Daniel Cohen's book, Equations from God, he actually illustrates this idea with something Plato did. He'd take a stick and he'd ask his students to draw a circle in the dirt, and then he'd have them close their eyes and imagine a perfect circle. And the instructional lesson that he was giving them is, you are capable, because of the imprint of some divinity upon you, to envision something that is ideal, even though you can't draw it, you can't replicate it, and in truth, you've never seen it before. Now, that idea resonates with people. There is an ideal. And when we lower standards, we not only reduce achievement academically, we wound the soul. The fourth idea that was resonant for us with so many new families in classical education was the idea to inspire a love of learning. Instead of learning as a chore, instead of memorizing, it was the idea that we wanted to inspire a love of learning. And I think this goes back to Plato as well. You know, the idea is sometimes Dr. Brake talked about feeding the village in the Sudan. We've probably heard this parable before where if you give a man a fish, he eats for the day. And many of you could tell the second part of it, which is that if you teach him to fish, he eats for a lifetime. But now I say, if you inspire him to love fishing, he feeds the whole village for his whole life. And you have a quantum order of magnitude expansion on the idea of simply teaching and learning. You've inspired a love of learning. And that is one of the hallmarks, perhaps one of the ideals that we aim at with classical education. And that is an idea that resonates the first time you hear it. So I wanted to at least let you know some of our most successful ideas in doing this. And as soon as that presentation fit better, and we started getting more responses, we also wanted to take a look at our admissions process. I wanted to make sure that we were connecting as much as possible with likely candidates. You know, I think Donnie has a beautiful analogy, which is if we own a bakery, we could just open the doors and let people come to us, and that would be fine. But if we are really trying to connect what we have as good food with hungry people, we need to go out and find a way to, where are they looking for food? And let's be available to them. But you also don't want to give that to people with celiac disease. There are some people that are not suited for the food that you have for one reason or another. You're going to be bringing in students that are problems for your administrator. You're going to bring in families that don't share your ideals. And so I wanted to make sure that we weren't just casting such a broad net without distributing the responsibility for funneling that down a little bit in a very careful, thought-out admissions process. So the third person I want, we saved the best for last year. I wanted to introduce Mrs. Barbara Rogers. She's the admissions director, and she doesn't look tired, but she's admitted over 275 students just so far this year. Not single-handedly. There's a good staff of people that help her. Barbara, before coming to Coram Deo Academy, worked at the University of Dallas, a classical university in the Dallas area. And she's been involved in really acting as the admissions director since 2001. So if I could ask you to give your attention to our admissions director, Mrs. Barbara Rogers.
Thank you, Bill. Well, it is an honor to be here today, and we thank you for this opportunity. It's been said, smart people learn from their mistakes. Wise people learn from the mistakes of others. So I'm going to shift our focus a bit and openly share some of our past mistakes, which I hope will help you avoid a few pitfalls. Donnie talked about SEO and online reviews, and we really need to highlight that importance. You can have an aesthetically pleasing website chock full of great content that is easy to navigate, but if you don't spend the time and money to undergird it with the best SEO, you've greatly reduced its effectiveness. Coram Deo Academy lost critical SEO functionality several years ago when we went through two consecutive website rebuilds. And it's not that the sites look that bad, but if our inquiries went down, our attendance at admission events and went down, and consequently, applications and new student enrollment also decreased. So then Donnie fixed that, and we turned around that trend. He also got us paying attention to those online reviews, and that is just becoming increasingly important. We now see applicants list that as the way they heard about the school and why they applied. We've mentioned a little bit about the number of meetings and getting kind of weary, you know, when it comes to connecting classical Christian education to a weary world. Sometimes we are those ones who are the most weary. And with three campuses, we had triple the admission events each month. And so we ramped that back, but we ramped it back too much. And so Donnie helped get us committed to increasing that again, and it bore great fruit for us. Are there some stumbling blocks in your admission process? We've had an online application, which is easy to navigate, for many years, but all our supporting documentation and our reference letters were still being handled the old-fashioned way. We actually lost a fine family one summer to another school because we couldn't get it done smoothly. We horsed around for about 2 weeks trying to track down their family pastoral reference. It was a PDF you had to download, print, handwrite it, and email or scan it in, and so forth. So in the meanwhile, the family applied to another school, and the mom outright told me all was taken care of online in 24 hours. So that motivated me to make a change. Our parents now upload their documents, their digital photos, right directly into the online application. And our reference forms are all electronic now, too. And it's not that it's a super sophisticated system. We actually use SurveyMonkey, but simplifying this step removed a stumbling block. We also take online reservation for our admission events. This speeds up our check-in process. We have pre-printed name tags ready at the check-in table. We're able to quickly take attendance. Anyone who comes to a meeting without making that reservation in advance is handed my iPad, and they fill out their inquiry form right then and there. So there's no need to decipher handwritten sign-in sheets and try to figure out an email address from it. Another mistake we've made was having an admission coordinator who wasn't confident in working with all grade levels and knew the school really well. We had one who was great with grammar school families but was scared to death of logic in high school. And so her tours just weren't that effective. The person that replaced her actually knows the school very well. She has children in the school and is comfortable knowing everything about the mission of the school and the school culture, the athletics and fine arts. And that's just so important to have an authentic representation of that. We also had an inconsistent or maybe even non-existent admission review process there for a while. There were years when I wasn't 100% certain that on all three campuses we were consistently enforcing our admission standards. So we implemented a better review process. I've got a committee with the testing director, myself, and the school director involved with that particular family, and we review things. And if we admit a weak candidate, someone's a little bit of a risk, we audit those rosters in the fall, and we go back and we look and say, how's it going for that family now? It's October. Are they making it? Do they need help? Was this a bad decision? Or was this a risk we took that panned out okay? So I think it's important to take a look at that. When you cast your net further and you've been more successful in reaching potential families, you've got greater freedom to turn that weak candidate down. So a great admission process provides checks and balances for your school. I like to think of the classroom as the heart of the school. You can view the administrative team as, in essence, the brain for your organization, and your support staff serves as a skeleton for your school. I view the admission department as the skin. This is an important protective organ, and in fact, it's the body's largest organ. So how you handle your admission decisions will affect your Christian community and the culture of your school. And it's a privilege for us to be a part of that to help serve your teachers and your school well. Thank you.
One of the things that Barbara mentioned was dedicating some people to the admissions process, and that is something that I would want to recommend. I know, we, believe it or not, we are all operating on tight budgets, and we all have to do multitasking. You have to be a little bit of chief cook and bottle washer no matter where we are. And sometimes we have a receptionist also serving as the admissions coordinator, and you know that can work as long as that's an admissions evangelist that's also serving as a receptionist. Sometimes that doesn't work to share those duties because your first priorities aren't met. And that's one of the things that we had to learn, was that we have wonderful people that we needed to make sure were dedicated. And the additional dollars we spent doing that have come back to us. You know, one of the things that we've done now in the last 3 years after reinventing this process is that we've added about 270 students net to the school. It's now 1275 instead of the 1,000 it was at. And our retention from faculty and from families have gone up slightly in that process. So we do feel like we've learned to do that in the right way. So in summary, as we close, I do want to thank this team of people that have challenged me to be better at doing this. I think we want to remind you that what you produce is excellent. As you've heard all day, the encouragement is that what we do in the classical Christian school movement is superior. It's unlike anything else. And if we're going to teach to an ideal, like Plato said, why not offer the world the ideal? And so this is a wonderful idea. This is something that people do need, and they are looking for, although they may not know to look for you. John Milton Gregory's Seven Laws of Teaching, the fourth law, I think it is. Yes, the fourth law is the law of the lesson. And it states, the truth to be taught must be learned through truth already known. And it helped me immensely in just my own personal journey that I've gone on to see that people that wanted classical Christian education the most were waiting for us, were waiting for me to express it in a language of truth they already knew. Thank you so much for your attention at this end of a long day. God bless you.